You've heard the buzzword for years. Scale onboarding, CSMs should be doing training, digital is a strategy, not a segment. But here's the truth. Most customer success teams are juggling a mess of tools, changing priorities, and have barely enough bandwidth to breathe, let alone scale. That vision we've all been chasing, it is finally real. Learning isn't trapped inside an LMS anymore. It's embedded across the entire customer journey. And that's where Skilljar, now part of Gainsight, is changing the game. Skilljar is becoming the backbone of scalable self-serve learning, whether it's in your academy, inside your product, in your community, or beyond. And because it's integrated with Gainsight's customer OS, it connects to where your customer data and your CSMs already live. This isn't theory, it is happening now. Companies like Airtable, Zendesk, Okta, Miro, and Asana are already doing it, with Skilljar and Gainsight leading the charge. So if you're ready to stop duct taping your customer education strategy together, visit Skilljar.com today. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to C-Lab, the Customer Education Laboratory. Do I have to say it? Yes, I do, always. This is where we explore how to build really good customer education programs. We experiment with new approaches, ideas, things that haven't been done before. And the most important thing, pardon my cough, is to exterminate the myths, you know, Doctor Who here, and bad advice that stop growth dead in its tracks. I am Dave Darrington, and welcome. Dan, would you please introduce yourself? Say hello to the audience. It's good to see you.
Hello, audience. So, I'm Dan Braveway. I'm currently the Senior Director of Product Training at MediaOcean, and I'm on the Board of Trustees at SIVMA, based out of the UK, and it's great to chat to you all.
Wonderful. I'm really thankful that we have the opportunity to actually do this, because last time we talked in person, we saw each other at SIVMA. It was great. Actually, yeah, we've had time to get together again too. So this is wonderful. This is how we're going to end cap our year, and let's start off with the International Day of. We pregame this, and I think we settled on we're going to talk about the two of them. It is today. It's International Guacamole Day. Might be my choice, but we got to sparring around National Play-Doh Day of all things. Oh, and our feelings about Play-Doh are, what was that about having children and
just all
and
turns to brown eventually. That's what it is. Once you've got children involved, it's a pot of brown and then you've got to replace it. It becomes expensive. It's not as fun as you think it's going to be.
Is that an allegory for our customer education programs or no, maybe?
I hope not.
All right. Well, that was fun. Okay, let's get into it here. Today, Dan, again, thank you for joining us. This is an episode that I've wanted to do with you for some time. And the reason for that is, okay, let's go back in time a little bit. You know, we're exploring instructor-led training, or we'll always throw a V in front of it because these days, again, thanks to things like COVID, virtual, being online all the time has really changed the way that we've done our work. So you lead programs at MediaOcean. You've been there nearly a decade now. And I want to start with something a little bit, I guess, bold and controversial by saying, look, ILT has been declared dead so many times, and yet it remains, right, the backbone of many SaaS learning strategies. Why and how do we really run it well now that we're here in 2025? Things that we hear about is, oh, it's too expensive, or it's old school, or, you know, whatever you want to say about it, but yet it remains one of the single most important levers we can use for training our customers, our partners, and our employees. So ready to dig into this, Dan? Ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. So what I'd like to do first is the thing about C-Lab is that it's so important to us and to our community to share your story. And we all have found our way into like that accidental instructional designer book, found ourselves here, some intentionally, but very rarely. So what can you tell us about your background and how you got here?
Oh, I think it contains elements of accidental and then elements of deliberate, I think, my journey. Because I think, like, my career, I was chatting to somebody the other day, and I said I feel like it separates into three parts. I've got my early career where I think, you know, I worked in management for a while, and there were bits of that role that I used to really enjoy, like presenting to the team, like the big team briefings and the team meetings and stuff, and being in front of everyone. I always used to enjoy that, and sort of part of reflection on where my career changed was looking at that and sort of like, okay, I really like this bit. I don't like this other bit of management. In particularly was working in retail at the time. So it's like, I don't like this particular bit, but I really like this bit of presenting. Like, how can I do more of this? And so, like, that was my kind of first phase of career, was the retail management side of things. And then I kind of moved into in-store training. I did a bit of time with Apple for a few years, found that to be really interesting, and like learned so much at that time about how they approached training with lots of new employees, lots of churn there when there was ever any kind of product launches, how they would kind of build programs around that. And so then kind of really being very deliberate of going, I really enjoy being a trainer. Like this is the job for me, and I want to now go and pursue this. So yeah, fortunately a role opened up at MediaOcean. I was able to apply and was successful in becoming a, you know, training specialist / product trainer. And so it was kind of maybe accidentally finding the skills that I enjoyed, but then very deliberately making the decision to go into something that I could utilize those skills on a more regular basis.
Right. Yeah. That's sparking some experiences that I had in my life. So you would say then you're that natural educator, that natural trainer, where it's somewhere in here where I like doing this. You're engaging with people, you're answering questions. I mean, of course you spent time at Apple and you've had to help do all that stuff. That's profound. Right. One experience that I scarcely remember to say anything about is my earliest jobs was I was a tour guide at a caverns in Missouri and in the United States. And it was, I loved it. Just talking and telling people cool stories and learning about stuff and walking through, of course, a very cool environment in the middle of the summer heat. But that, so you're one of the tribe of instructor-led trainers who really dig this space.
Oh, there's a buzz and an energy you get from doing it that, I don't know, I think it's hard to fulfill elsewhere. Like I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, it just feels so good. And the reaction you see from people, the ability to make changes and feel the audience coming with you, see those aha moments. Like it's wonderful.
Right. Well, let's then come current, and then through the rest of the discussion, I'd really like to thread the needle a bit and talk about some of the, it's not really a playbook, but approaches for people to really get in and today in 2025 expand upon programs that you may already have, because not everybody has it all together the first go round, right? So what does instructor-led training now look like at MediaOcean, and you know, what is it that constitutes a really powerful, impactful program with you? You're thinking about your technology and the kinds of sessions you run, and in the global presence. Tell me more about what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely evolved a lot over the years. I think when I first started and started kind of moving more into like the management responsibilities hit, we were pretty much all ILT. That was our solution. And so we were very, you know, we had to get as much information into those sessions as possible, depending on who the audience was around the world. And, you know, obviously pre-COVID, we were flying here, there, or everywhere, or getting a train here, there, and everywhere. We were doing the thing that was, you know, looking back on now, you go, how did we do this? Because, you know, it's...
Wait. So you've been there almost 10 years, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you preceded that entire thing.
Absolutely. We had started going to virtual ILT back in 2018. So we were very well positioned when 2020 came along, that we had software and we had a kind of a way of approaching it. But it's certainly not what it is several years down the line. Like we've evolved it so much in that time. But yeah, to begin with, it was that traveling here, there, and everywhere, 2-3 days in an office, doing all the training sessions on site, heading back, travel days that were absolutely killer for the team. And then 2018, we had a product that was probably our first global product that we were training. So we couldn't travel to countries that we couldn't get to, and potentially, the cost involved in doing that would have outweighed the profits that we could have made from it, obviously with that type of thing. So we got a software that could do hands-on learning, which enabled us to get people into these virtual labs. It was very clunky. It was people had to install the software on their computer, and then depending on what country in the world you're training, some people can't install, so you end up having to try and switch this to a Zoom or a Teams, and then you lose all the hands-on side of things. So we kind of went with it for a while. We saw some really good feedback from it, but the vast majority of the feedback we got was I can't join, my audio is not working, we had to switch to the Teams, the download took 20 minutes, I was late. There was all of this technological problems that we had. So we went into the market, we came out with Strigo as our solution, and we switched to that in 2021. And that provided a really good basis for us to then accelerate change, because we had the ability then to get rid of all of that. All of the, silliness at the beginning of a training session. We didn't have that 10, 15 minute wait of people installing the software. Can you hear me? Can you not hear me? Have we got everybody here? That's all gone. It's a cloud-based software. Everything's there. So people joined, they're joined, and we're good to go. And so that then led us to get into to sort of positions as we developed to go, how do we make this experience even better now? Because we haven't got these types of challenges. Of course, you're always going to have some technology challenges. It's technology at the end of the day. Something's going to go wrong. There's going to be the odd thing here and there. But, ultimately, we get people in. How do we get them going quickly? How do we get into the content as quickly as possible? How do we make this fun? How do we make this engaging? How do we create an environment for people to feel like they can engage with us? I think the last few years in particular, and you mentioned the kind of framework, which we can get to in a bit, but we started to kind of formalize how we really want to approach this. How do we maximize every part of an ILT session so that it is the best it possibly can be?
That's a great story. And if I could bring back a few things that just, triggered me to think how far we've come in a decade even. And I think that sad to say that the COVID transition, the COVID experience that we had globally, so much negative came out of that, of course. But the upside was we learned how to work online, and it really forced those platforms. I remember this, Dan. I've worked in a classroom environment at university. Going even back further, I remember I worked a lot of worked in a laboratory, but I was in the laboratory data systems and softwares. So we would have to set up all of this stuff to make sure that somebody could have a learning experience. And now that's it. And I'm not going to say it's completely gone, but with platforms like Strigo, platforms like CloudShare, we at Atlassian have our one Atlassian stack that allows us to do virtual labs. And that experience alone has just completely transformed everything. Let's go a little further. I want to ask you what success looks like, but I'm going to hold off because I really want to get you to elaborate upon this. And I say this with hesitancy. It was a little scratchy. I think that's on my computer, but we'll talk about that. I'll fix that later. There are models or approaches that we can use to really engage and make our customers, like you said, have this tuned experience and be really have fun with it, learn, right? And you've come up with a model, I think. I'd like to use the word model, but framework works as well. A model is we're always changing it. Give me an overview of this, and I'm just going to turn the mic over to you so that you can walk us through. I may stop you to ask some questions. And then I think after this, we'll include a one pager that we'll create together to share with everybody. Because I think this is something you could just stick on your desk next to your computer and go, oh yeah, this is a great, I don't want to forget any one of these steps. So passing the mic over to you and walk us through it. This is really cool.
Yeah. And I think this has come through that development over the years and seeing how, you know, hearing a lot about how other people approach things and taking bits and pieces and then putting bits and pieces on through other experiences that we had and like anecdotal feedback that we've had from customers. But what we look at the moment is a tell me, show me, let me try, which is quite familiar with a lot of folks. But then we also have let me explore, review, and test me. And so we have that as our right. framework for each one of the core concepts that we're going to cover in a live training. And we try to kind of keep it to two or three kind of core concepts that we want to cover to not overwhelm and, you know, throw too much at folks. But, you know, when we look at, you know, breaking those down, it's, you know, when it comes to tell me, I think hopefully most people are familiar with like the concept of within or, you know, why is mm-hmm. this important? Why does this matter? Like that's, you know, ultimately one of the biggest things you can get from having an instructor present with you is to explain why this is important for everybody on this call and this event. But then when it comes to the instructions, I think one thing we've learned over the years is that it can be very easy to over explain instructions. When you're an instructor, you can feel that, that thing that all instructors do, the power of talking. And so, trying to keep the instructions as concise as possible and not have to necessarily repeat them too much. Trying to keep the instructions down to maybe two or three instructions at a time so we can, you know, make sure that we work through everything. But obviously very importantly is also the content of the class and the instructions you're given are hopefully based on real world experiences and real world scenarios. And obviously it needs to be relevant. And if it's not relevant, then you're going to lose people very, very early on. So, you know, so we want to make sure that it's as real as possible, but yeah, not trying to over explain things. It's just keep the instructions nice and simple. And then we can move on to the show me component. So, you know, allowing them a moment to take that information in, digest it. Perhaps if they've got questions, they can come back with those questions shortly, but demonstrate visually how to do something in the platform. So again, this is where, as you mentioned, like CloudShare and Strigo, these fantastic products where people can see your screen and then ultimately you can then see their screen further down the line, but you can show them how to do something. But you can also then contain steps in those products as well. You can have the instructions on the side of the screen so that, you know, people, when they come to do things, they don't get lost. Or in the case of how we approach it, we tend to put the inputs at the side of the screen. So, because the inputs aren't going to be the inputs they're going to really use, because we're using, you know, this is a training session. This is kind of fictitious data. We can't use your actual data. That's, you know, not going to happen. So the inputs aren't really the thing that's important. It's why are we doing this? What's the context around each one of these features and functionalities? What do you need to know about what goes right and what goes wrong here? And so that's why we put the inputs at the side, so people don't have to focus on that part of the tell me experience. The tell me is the why are we doing this and what is important about the things that we're doing. So when we're showing that, we're obviously reiterating the fact that here's your instructions are down the side and here's where the boxes are going to go. But this is what's going to ultimately end up here later down the line, or this is going to go into maybe another system and talk to this other thing. And this is why all of this is important. So, you know, let them see how the task gets done. And, you know, make sure that those task bits are in there. So, yeah, again, that was something that we learned over time, was that if we didn't have the prompts in there of what to enter in, people will start asking us, well, what do I put in this box? And, you know, the answer really is it doesn't really matter, as long as you know what the box does and you know when you come to use the system for real what you should actually put in that box. But we ended up getting a lot of experience with people like, well, what am I supposed to put in now? So we made sure that all of those kind of prompts were in there. So that's the show me side of things. And then you've got the bit that everyone is there for, which is, you know, let me do it. Let me touch the product. Let me experience it. Let me, you know, get involved with it. So, you know, this is where they, you know, we step back, we let them practice, we let them give it a go. You know, and again, with these types of products that we can use, we can see how they're getting on during these things. So if somebody's doing really well, we can, you know, we can name check people, we can say things, we can reinforce the learning as people are going through, if everyone's doing really well at it or if everyone's accelerating through. but there's also the ability to kind of highlight where there may be a mistake, and mistakes are brilliant and they're fantastic in these types of environments because they're the mistakes that they could be making at their desks when they go back to use it for real. So we enjoy mistakes. Sounds like a very strange thing to say, but I think, you know, you can take so much more from, I mean, when you look at life in general, you learn most from your mistakes. I know it's a kind of a soft application to this, but you do learn most from the things you get wrong. So, you know, we'd like to encourage those moments. We certainly won't name check, hey, you're rubbish at this, but, you know, hey, I've just noticed something, you know, make you feel really bad about how it's going. But we want to create an environment where, and we obviously state this, you know, during the session, it's like, we want you to feel comfortable to make errors, and we want you to feel comfortable to ask the simplest of simple questions, because each one of us has gone on this journey at some stage where we've asked the simple questions, quote unquote, and they're not simple questions. They're important questions that you need to ask to make sure that you are comfortable and happy with everything. So we try to create an environment where, yeah, mistakes happen. We elaborate on them. We explain why they could have happened and what led to these things, and then how to prevent them from happening. And they create these nice little moments where, again, it's a live experience. You don't want to feel like a robot going through it, and it's, you know, so heavily scripted that we've got to hit the beats as we go through. It's like, you want it to deviate. You want to get those questions that come in that go, oh God, I actually don't think I've ever had that question before. You want that. It certainly is a, you know, as an instructor, it's the kind of bit again that gets you going with this type of thing. So yeah, we encourage that, and yeah, we obviously help people along the way. We can support people in different ways with that. Sorry.
No. I'd like you to use your favorite quote here first, and then I'd like to back up a little bit. So you got to say it, Dan.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge DC fan, a huge Batman fan. So one of my favorite life quotes is from Batman Begins, which is, why do we fall, Mr. Wayne? To learn how to pick ourselves up. And I think that's always been a resonant quote that I've had being a bit of a comic book nerd. But I think it's there, you know, why do you make mistakes? It's to learn from your mistakes and to grow. And that's applicable throughout all of life. But, you know, when you're applying that to an IoT, you learn from that so that you hopefully never make that mistake again, or that you can help others not make that mistake as well, because you can educate each other. And, you know, again, these folks are going to leave that session. They're going to go maybe to an office space, maybe to a virtual space. They can be working with each other, and they're going to be talking. They're going to be colleagues, and they can all help each other as well. So like, oh yeah, I made that mistake in training. This is how I fixed that. Or this is how, you know, instructor from Mediocean helped me fix that in the moment. Let's try it together and see if we can fix it. And, you know, again, you're kind of creating, you're almost kind of creating community from these types of experiences.
This episode is brought to you by Parda.io. Parda is a next generation authoring platform built for customer education. Okta, Bersanio, Miro, Rider, and many other fast growing companies rely on Parda to stay in sync with product updates, build customer learning experiences, and manage content at scale. With Figma-style collaboration, granular branding, built-in localization, an AI assistant, seamless skill jar integration, and more, Parda lets you scale customer education the way it should be: fast, flexible, and collaborative. To learn more, check them out today at parda.io/clab. That's parda.io/celab. Okay, so here's what I was wanting to do. I'm going back in time, and I'm thinking about all of the experiences I had about learning. I loved at the time, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there were a lot of things about different kinds of learning styles. We've debunked a lot of this as from academics, but what you're doing is you're doing multimodal. You have telling, the people that are auditory, they want to listen. And a lot of people pick up like that. Show me. Now I'm in the visual learning. I'm cueing on what's happening in the space. I see you do it. I understand that. And that resonates. Ideally, you're doing all of these things at once. And then you're into the let me try, where you're coaching. And why I love that quote from Batman is something, and I'm trying not to narrate my story, but there was one thing I think is really important. I used to run a class at uni that was about video game design. And I fell into that. I spent a lot of time in the game industry and also taught database design and other things. But what was really cool was I said, look, I've got rid of all of our grades as normal. I'm going to kind of a leaderboard and we're having experience. I want you to struggle. I want you to fall. I want you to fail because that's how you learn. And it profoundly altered the fun and the way we approach the course. So when you're doing that in the laboratory or the software environment, and you've got a platform that I'm sure is as complicated as others in SaaS, right? And we focus on that administrator and that the things you were talking about with that, I think about that persona in particular. You're an administrator, you're doing a lot of really, you're holding up the world, right? If you can't, in the moment, this is why certification is important for that level. If you can't show your experience set with the platform and be confident about it, you get into situations which can be sticky. One of which I remember, I'd done training on this platform. I'd been using this system for a long time. And I went and I changed one configuration setting. And the next thing I know, all of the company, including my manager, were yelling at me. And they thought I lost all of the data for an entire years of our platform, or usage of our platform. Turned out to be configuration setting. It was all good. But my inexperience with that and the fact that I didn't really know and I didn't have that kind of training was set me back. So I love this multimodal learning style approach. So let's carry on with that and talk about what's next.
Yeah, what's next is something that we moved on to in the last 2-3 years or so. As I mentioned before, when we had the technology gave us the ability to start fine-tuning things. And mm-hmm. One of the things we looked at was again our survey the feeling that an instructor had in the moment, and having people that would maybe go through what that task was, go through that process and would finish, and there would be other learners that would take longer. And again, that's completely fine, of course, because we all learn at different speeds and things take us a little bit longer to get through depending on what it is. But having people then sit there, and they might be sitting there for maybe 5 minutes or so, twiddling their thumbs. And how do we keep them interested? Because we don't want to lose them, and then even, you know, don't want to lose them full stop, but also we don't want to lose them temporarily and then have to try and get them back. And it feels like an effort to be like, right, we're going to move on to the next thing. Come on, all, let's do this. So that's where we kind of landed on this Let Me Explore idea, which was initially around keeping these people involved. So we've just done this task. Now, for those that just finished, once you've completed this task, how about you go and explore this feature? This feature does X, Y, Z. I'm not going to give you any more than that. Go off, have a play with it, see what you come with. Let me know, come on the audio or come into the chat. Talk to me about how that worked for you. Were you able to achieve the objective that we had here by doing it yourself and figuring it out? Because again, these people are going to be independently working in your platform after that day. So you want them to be as sufficient as possible. So can we give them these like kind of mini tasks throughout? And that developed more so into a kind of coming back to the let me try of, we already wanted to make sure there was lots of repetition with that. So we made sure that we had 2 or 3 goes at doing something. And sometimes we like incentivize that as well. So maybe on the third time we'd go like, right, who can do it the fastest? You know, let's see who does it. And I, you know, kind of watching everybody and like, oh, you did it quickest. But obviously once everyone was comfortable and you felt like you could do that type of thing. But yeah, the Let Me Explore initially geared at those that were quicker, but then we turned it into, right, well, actually we just want to give people, say playtime is the wrong word, but we want to give them time to go off. Like, okay, like, you can change things, you can delete things, you can customize these screens. Go and see if you can figure it out and let us know in the chat when you figured out how to do something, because then somebody else might figure out from that and then they're going to go and give it a go. And let's have a period of time where you are set loose, but you've got me here so that you can ask questions about the things you know you're going to do in the product and I can help you. But also if you start clicking around and breaking it, I can also come and help you if you've broken it so badly that you need some help. So that was something that kind of evolved from just the one scenario into, right, we can see how this can expand to really help people get the most kind of out of these types of experience. And we see that. I mean, we had some, you know, reservations when we opened that wider of like, well, will people just sit there twiddling their thumbs because they don't want to explore? Like, okay, I've done the things you've asked me to do. I'm good. I'm just going to maybe, you know, check an email or check a Slack message here. But that actually doesn't happen. People really seem to appreciate that time to go off and explore by themselves and have somebody there to help them out. So, you know, we really cover the core components of say like a workflow or the way they get through the system, but all of that extra stuff, that's the stuff we can kind of splice in to make it interesting for them and let them go and come figure it out themselves. So yeah, that's something that's been really well received.
Well, there's one question I have then related to that, which is, okay, so between the you do it, right, you're getting your hands on, and the let me explore, this is where, again, I'm shadowing or I'm channeling my former self where I was in a classroom and I'm walking around, right? And then I say, oh, Dan, you did something really cool here. And at that point, we were hampered because the technology, well, this isn't quite true. Some of the labs that I had in university where I could control a computer and show it on the screen. Now we have the software to do that. So do you often find yourself in these, what I'd call teaching moments, where they're not just teaching moments, they're also the creative moments or the aha moments, where in one case, tell me about that. Like if you come up against somebody and they did something and it's wrong, you're not spotlighting negatively. How do you roll that into the entire classroom? What do you do with it?
Yeah, I think like with some things are quite common that would go wrong when people use some of our products. Mm-hmm. So we're able to say that to them, like, yeah, we, you know, that's something that we've seen in time come through to our support team, or we've seen in time, you know, we've been training this session dozens of times this week alone. We've seen this, this particular thing come up loads of times. So, you know, we're not singling you out at all. And, no. You know, you're just making a common error. And that's a good thing that you're making a common error, because, you know, it's a common error. And now we all know what happens, and kind of trying to point out then how you could have prevented it, or what could you have seen? You know, one of the things that comes up in one of our products, we get like an explanation mark that comes up in the toolbar where if you haven't filled out everything correctly, that's there. And so, okay, I can see on your screen that's happened. Mm-hmm. Try and figure out like what went wrong. Cause it looks like to me that you're not completed out everything as correctly as possible. You find out what's happened, come back to me. If you need me to help you fix it, I can help you fix it, but can you fix it yourself? And again, just keep trying to enable them as much as possible to be independent, because that's ultimately the objective of giving them that independence in the product and that comfort to be able to navigate all different scenarios.
Right. And then I think you can roll through the last two, which are, okay, we've done all the stuff. Now, refocus, and what do we do after that?
Yeah, we a couple of things. We review what we've covered off. So we like to kind of come, you know, what did they learn? Let's try and see if we can again get them involved in that. What would have, and quite often we'll find people will talk about things like the mistakes they've made, or maybe the extra bit of exploration they've done, and go, okay, I didn't realize I could customize these things, and that's really helpful because I know I've got to do X, Y, Z when I get back to my desk. So it's great that I got to do that with you. But also we want to make sure that we're reviewing those very important call outs that we're making, because again, it's not just the you fill out these fields, it's what do these fields do, or what does this button do that connects to this bit? Like, let's make sure we know this very high level information. And then we kind of use that to reinforce the class. And then we follow that up with test me. Now, test me isn't that's now, you know, full blown go for it at this point, because we've still got, you know, two or three more cool concepts to review, but we might throw a couple of questions to the group around those core concepts that we were trying to get to, or even we don't structure this with, you know, these are the questions all of you instructors have to ask, because again, we have to be dynamic in the moment to what is happening. So if there is something that's really important that's come out of the class so far, let's ask a question on it so that to see if everyone is remembering this information as we go through. So it's not like a formalized testing process. We do have an academy. We do have testing. We do have credentialing and all that kind of stuff that comes with this. It all sits in part of that program, but it's just kind of, again, trying to reinforce. Did we remember everything? Let's make sure you did remember everything. Am I comfortable then at that point to move on? Because if I, as an instructor, don't feel like maybe we've got this, let's go back over some of those steps previously made? Do we need to give you a little bit more exploration time? Do we need to go back, right back to tell me again and go through the steps? Do you need more time? And you make those adjustments depending on it. So you just want to get a sense of, is the group where it needs to be? And then again, you can have fun with it. You know, you can give out those virtual training points that, you know, seemingly don't mean anything, but 1,000 points for Gryffindor. 1,000 points for Gryffindor. For whatever reason, for some people means so much in the moment, and it's fun. And again, it creates that, you know, that great atmosphere that you're trying to create from an ultimately human experience. So again, you play with the idea of, like, you know, who can answer the question fastest finger first and all this type of stuff. So but it is for you as an instructor to make sure you're comfortable that this group is where they need to be before we move forward into maybe going into the next right. subject.
Right. So no, people aren't lagging behind. And that's good. I like that approach, that model, that framework where you're walking people through. Now you've got multimodality, you're looping in the activity of the class, you're bringing it out. There are some really cool things that are happening in the virtual lab delivery space. I'm going to talk about them right now. But let's follow up on this with, okay, cool. I'm a new leader and I'm running a program and we've just got it off the ground. The things that I think are really important to hear from your perspective are, what are those, and again, mistakes are good because they teach you how to iterate fast. What are those mistakes that you think new ILT program owners make that that really cause them, you know, grief or trouble over time?
Yeah. I think you need to have people that are passionate about teaching, about instructing. I mean, I've certainly been to training sessions where it's not somebody's role, mm-hmm. and you can very quickly sense that. And that can be quite a turnoff. And it's trying to reduce those turnoffs that are there. One that I see very commonly, that is the, oh, why we wait for everyone to join. Okay. I mean, I turned up on time. Why, you know, let's start. You know, if this, you know, this isn't a Foo Fighters gig and Dave Grohl turns up 15 minutes late to start his show, he can get away with it. You can't.
You've had a personal experience here, I can tell.
Yeah. I'm not bitter at all, but there was a sweet triangle solo in the middle. But anyway, you can't get away with this rock star thing when it comes to a training. If the training starts That's at right. 10 a.m., the train starts at 10 a.m., you know, and let's not penalize those that got here on time. There are going to be people that join over the course of a, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 minute period. Of course, there's going to be meetings that have run over. There's going to be that ping of a Teams or Slack message or an email that somebody's had to check. We obviously appreciate that. Or there's the technology challenge of joining, but let's not pause everybody and have them wait in uncomfortable silence whilst we're waiting to make sure that we've got the count of head count correct. Like, can we get the session going in some way, shape or form? So again, that's not while we wait. Okay, like, hey, you're joining, it's great to see you, my name's Dan, let me tell you a little bit about myself, I'd love to hear about all of you, come and tell me. So it's still the same intro, but you're just not saying the while we wait. You're still doing some of the similar things about introductions, getting everyone to tell you who they are.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you know that time is really going to be something that you have to bear in mind with this, because, you know, you've had a message from somebody who's like, oh, we really need to wait for so-and-so to turn up, they're going to be another couple of minutes. Then again, it's not while we're waiting for so-and-so to turn up. Hey, what are you streaming on Netflix right now? What are you listening to on Spotify or Apple Music? Tell me a bit more about your world right now, or what you're looking to get out of today's session. Like, you throw something in to keep it going. What's the weather like? That's always I'm a Brit. We love talking about the weather. So, you know, it's always cloudy, but, you know, there we go. But we, you know, what can you do? And then how do you create something from that? I mean, I've had some wonderful experiences with people telling me what they're watching on TV or what albums they're listening to. And then somebody else is like, oh my God, I love that album, or I love that show, or, oh, I haven't watched that show yet. Is it really good? And again, we're creating that community of people really interested and people are getting excited in the beginning. And then you can just breeze that into, right, let's get going. And then you can kind of move into that framework as kind of quickly as possible. So that's part of it. I think like learning objectives, I think the common phrase is death by PowerPoint. Nobody wants a full slide deck in these types of things. Something I picked up, there was a LinkedIn post about this, and somebody mentioned like, oh, you know, what I do when I get to learning objectives is I just show them. I just will show them the completed thing in our product and then go, right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do these bits here. We're going to do these bits here. And this is ultimately what you're going to have at the end of it. And I was like, that's really cool, because then I don't have to show PowerPoint that everyone, generally speaking, looks at and goes, PowerPoint. But I can show you the product and I can show you what you're going to get to. And it sort of kind of implants that in your head of like, right, well, at the end of this, this is what mine should look like as well. And so you can do these things. So
it's a template approach where then you begin with the end in mind, as Stephen Covey would say, right?
Absolutely. And yeah, I think that's the kind of most common thing I see when I've experienced ILT or VILT from other folks, is it's that getting going, getting people engaged early, don't leaving people behind, getting that kind of sense of community to begin with, and just trying to get into doing something as quickly as possible. Like, again, people don't want to be waiting there. If they know it's going to be a hands-on session, they don't want to be waiting 20 minutes before they even touch your product. Like, that is just out of the question. Can we get there in 5 minutes? Can we do those introductions? Can we create a bit of fun to begin with? Can we also find out who we've got? I mean, that's another thing with it is, I think generally speaking, a lot of the people that we tend to train tend to be relatively new to our product. Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes we might have somebody who has some level of experience. How do we use that? And you've used our product for four years. Why are you here? What are you looking to get out of today? So how can I make this experience a little bit different from you to keep you energized? But also, can I use you to get everybody else where they need to get to? Because if you've got experiences, I might ask you to answer the question to the group. So that keeps you interested. And then it creates you as a sort of subject matter expert for this audience, who ultimately are your colleagues.
Right.
So we're creating something that can be utilized outside of the session. Or if they've got tons of experience in the industry, you know, our products are in the marketing and advertising space. That space seems to rapidly evolve, like weekly, if not daily. It's an ever evolving field. I had somebody a couple of weeks ago who was like, I've got 18 years of experience in the industry. I'm like, blimey, like this, that's fantastic. So I'm like, great. As we're going through this, if you folks have got questions about, you know, these types of things about the industry, let's get this person to answer those questions as we're going through. And then again, like, where does that possibly lead to? You know, you try to think in these like, you know, utopian ways, but does somebody afterwards reach out to that person and go, hey, I'd really love to be mentored by you, because I've only just joined this industry. So again, you're creating a platform for all of these things that could happen, but you've got to enable it. You can't just see it as, I'm going to train you on three things you're doing in the platform. There's so much more you can do with the experience.
Let me interject here, and then I've got a couple of things to roll back to. But what you've just said really resonates for me. And this is something I'll connect in through what we're doing at Atlassian today. So for those who didn't know, I and my team own our instructor-led training experience, including our Atlassian training partner program. So we have so much of this amazing tapestry of learners when you think about the millions of people that use Atlassian products. And we do that as well. Other places I've seen some of the most skilled trainers even turn the tables and say, look, now because we have this great virtual platform training software, I could say, Dan, can I have your permission? But I'd like to show you your screen and you walk me through the things I'm talking, but I know, Dan, you're the expert here. Can you show me what you just did? Right? So that does a couple of things. One, it takes the heat off of you so you're not exhausted, to be frank. That's important, because you're balancing the energy of the room. You're in, like you said, how can I use this? So many ways. But then there is a post-event, post-training experience where we have a program that we call our Success Champions. These are people, and you see this all over, the champions, the people that are expert in your community, and actually they belong to our community as well, who we are standing up, supporting, and helping become that person who's that local leader, just like you said. hey, after the end of this, Jane was really jamming in the session today. You know what? When you go home, you go back to your office, back to your desk, provided that Jane has this remit, because sometimes people don't want to be bothered. For example, some admins who are super busy. But this actually continues the journey, because now you've shifted the center and the locus of training expertise to that local part, and now your partners. So that is the reason I also said that is because I want to seg back to a point you made when we were pre-gaming and talking about this, that an issue that a lot of instructor-led trainers, leaders may not do, and this is one of your big points here, is they fail to consider that post-training experience. I'm done. I'm out, right? I did my job. Can you tell me more about that post-training experience and the things that you think are important in that?
Yeah, I think I see the post-training experience. We are trying to set up the group for success. We are trying to create, as you say, like a community through these folks where they can utilize each other moving forward,
right,
that they know where to go for help and assistance. The ultimate goal of all of this is to make sure that they are comfortable and happy using and the product. So, you know, however we can do that. And then after that comes then us evaluating everything that's taken place. And that's several different forms. You know, that's that anecdotal, how does the instructors feel this is going? You know, they feeling like these classes are going the right way. Are they getting the right kind of engagement during them? Do they feel like there's opportunities through their experience of delivering it? Can we look at the feedback that we get from the customers themselves? You know, we run a survey at the end of training for that, just like that instant kind of, did that kind of get what you wanted to get out of it moment? And you know, how you feeling right now? We also follow up then with a survey 3 months later of, okay, so we did the thing. You've been doing your job now for 3 months. Did what we did 3 months ago help you in this last 3 months? And if it didn't, why did it not help you? And again, I come back to like our industry is evolving so quickly, and our products are also evolving. But sometimes people's workflows change because something's happened in the industry, right, and they now need to work a way around it. So, okay, right, we've learned that from these responses. How can we now tie this in? We need to kind of cover these scenarios. We need to change the scenarios that we're doing. So it's got to be ever evolving. And so, you know, we look at what the instructors are feeling around it, and we talk about this very regularly about this. And we said go out and look in the industry as well, and look at what others are doing, and try to get a sense of best practices from elsewhere. We bring that back. We talk. Does this fit with us? Do we kind of take these bits? I think it's so important that we all learn from each other. And I think that's one of the great things, right, that we have in customer education is we have a pretty tight community of, you know, some phenomenal experts. So what are they doing differently, and how can I learn from them? But yeah, learning first also from the customers, and what are they telling us? You know, we've had some very recent experience in the last sort of 12 to 18 months or so of a class that it's one of our most popular classes. It's one of our most trained classes, but we've kind of anecdotally always felt like the end of it is a bit of a rush. Like we've got that last bit that we really need to get through. We really feel like this is important. We've got to deliver it. And we all kind of were chatting to each other. We're like, we just feel like, is this even resonating at all? Like, does anyone actually get this bit? Are they completely not burnt out? Burnt out is the wrong phrase, but have they just reached critical point of that's as much information as I can take right now?
And brain's
now,
full.
Exactly. I'm done. You've covered the 2-3 things. I'm happy with that. I can go and do that. I want to go and do those 3 things. And we're like, yeah, but these other things, they might happen, you know, maybe a couple of weeks later. We may not capture these people in a live environment in that. So yeah, I think we moved to that, you know, the academy style model about 4 years or so ago. Three, four years ago. We've evolved that a lot as well. So that it's a journey. It's not just an event that's got this information. So we've moved stuff out so that we can make sure that we really enhance the ILT, the VILT. We really want to make sure that is as interesting and engaging and fun as possible. And we can take bits out and put that in our academy that are all important things, but we can then give them the the emphasis that they need to be, to feel important. And we were sensing that, but we were also getting feedback. We were looking at the surveys and always kept getting like, you know, maybe this is a bit too much information, or the end was a bit of a rush, and we're like, okay, right, we're going to have to address this. But now where we've moved to, you know, that blended experience, we're not just, you know, from years gone, just doing IoT. We do now have wonderful video content. You've got assessments. We've got all of that good stuff. Marrying it together, we can get people to where they need to get to. So we're looking at the data last week, and we've seen a 5-point increase in NPS satisfaction.
Oh, good. That's a lot.
On that class, because they're not getting overwhelmed anymore. They're getting what they need right now to go and do the thing that they need to do straight away. But the other stuff they need is also available to them, and they have access to it. They've already been engaged with it. So
question for you,
what we're saying about like, yeah.
So one of the things we talked about in advance is, in addition to that, post-training, you're surveying, you're looping, you're feeding back information. Do you also do, and I wish I had a visual to show this, but if we think about a XY axis and product use, the day of training, you see a huge spike where everybody's logged in. So if that account, that training class has 10 people in it, hit a 10 out of 10. Day after, it kind of goes back down because we're going home, we're done. But then if you did it right, you have built a sequence or a cadence of touch points after you've trained that said, hey, guess what? Here's a recap of the things you learned. 2 days later, you have did you know that there's this little class online, a little on demand that will go deeper to this? So you're building a sequence of activities to keep that engagement going. And now you have a plateauing of, ideally, you've taken people up to the top and they stay there and they're logging in every day. I'm obsessed about adoption and retention, right? You want to do that. Are there any other things? And like, see, you're working that forgetting curve, the Ebbinghaus curve. To keep people going, not to just say, I train, I'm done.
Well, this is it. I mean, I think when you look at the forgetting curve and how quickly people forget, one of the things that's really important to us is the scheduling of these events and knowing when people need them. We don't want to train somebody today and then they don't touch the product for 2 weeks. And we just know at that point it's going to be very difficult, almost impossible for them to have remembered most of the things that we covered, as great as the session would have been. So, you know, I think we're fortunate enough that we've got a wonderful operations team that works really closely with our customers. We know what the demands are going to be. So we get into a purpose of scheduling maybe 3 to 6 months in advance, knowing what kind of recurrence and what trends have happened over the years, looking at our data around the volume of trainings we've done and the other kind of trends that are going on. So we can make sure that when somebody starts on a Monday, there are classes available perhaps Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for them to join, if that is relevant for them, if they're going to be having to do the thing that week. Obviously, if they're not, there'll be classes the following week that they can join to make sure that they're doing the thing and then they're actually doing the thing for real life. So that is very important to us. And also it allows us to be dynamic as well. If something happens, you could win new business in a heartbeat, and suddenly now we've got a really important client that we now need to train. If we don't, and this is one of our learns over the years, if we don't have it premeditated on how we're going to do things, we don't know how much capacity we have to flex when something else happens. Right. So when that thing happens, I already know, like, okay, we've got this availability over the next few weeks. I can tell them that, and we can get into that cycle of figuring out how to do things. So I think, when you speak about the forgetting curve, it's certainly making sure the class is as close as possible, but also giving the availability, and then that allows you to be dynamic with it as well.
Exactly. We're getting close to time here, so let's do a couple of things. I'm going to ask you two more questions. Actually, I asked you one more question and then have you do a recap, because, hey, we'll use your pattern and your framework right here in our event, right here in podcast. One quick question would be, I'm always thinking about success. You've talked about so many fundamental things that are involved in that. How do you measure that? What are the kinds of things that you're tracking to understand, okay, this worked? You said NPS is one of them. You don't use CSAT, you use MPS for your training classes?
Yeah, we did use CSAT for a little while. We didn't see it vary too much from a point perspective, whereas MPS did seem to give us bigger shifts. So we were able to establish anything that was a bit problematic from that. Yeah.
Yeah, that the way that it's structured, NPS shows those detractors really, you know, it's 0 to 6 as a detractor, 7 and 8 are neutral, and then 9 and 10. So if you're anywhere down here, it's going to show up very negative. And then and then you'll have bigger shifts. Are there any other things that you track systemically over time, like post training engagement? Are you looking, do you have any frameworks? Do you use something like Gainsight or whatever product monitoring to see what see what people are doing from an adoption perspective over time?
It's what I'll call an area of interest, because I think it's certainly a very hard thing to do.
It is.
I think we've been very good at establishing the more reactionary type of stuff, like the MPSs, the CSATs, the follow-up surveys, the anecdotal feedback that we get from customers, which we do get. We get emails from time to time saying this instructor's phenomenal, or we'll be having those calls with our really important customers, and they'll be going like, we really love the live training, please keep doing the live training, that's fantastic. Or we've got this big initiative coming up, I hope you're doing live training for it. And we're like, yeah, we'll do that. So we've got all of that reactionary bit. I'd say more traditionally, support has been a kind of an eye that we've had on, looking at support ticket deflection, and can we then tie these people that have been to a class, and then is there deflection? And we've seen that. We've had people that we've got one particular course that has two classes. In fact, we have a couple of courses that have two classes, but what we saw a couple of years ago with one particular customer was they would never come back to the second class.
Oh.
And then for those people, there would be a huge spike in support tickets about the topics of that class. And it just kept coming up as a continual conversation of, well, our people don't know how to do the thing. What are you going to do about it? We do have a solution, but yeah, we delve. That was kind of at the tipping point of us diving into the data and seeing that there was the ones that did come back created 50% less support tickets about those topics. So once we had that, then you can then play with those numbers, can't you? You can then start working out what's the financial cost to that business from that. You know, how much does the average support ticket take in time for somebody? So you've lost all of these people for this many hours, and that's cost your business this amount of money, and all they've got to do is come back to a 1 hour class a couple of weeks later, and we can get rid of all of that. So we worked with that organization. They then mandated that class for all of their learners. We worked very closely with their L&D team, because they have the mechanisms for measuring those things. We can provide the data to them, and they've got the system of records on their side. So we worked really closely with them to partner on that. But I think we've got numerous other examples of support ticket, positive information about support ticket, like deflections around different things. But I think product adoption is definitely one for us that we really want to explore. We do have a product that plugs in. We've got Pendo, and in recent months, that the responsibilities of that have moved into kind of our overall business function that we're within. So we're really excited to start delving into how we can start to track those types of things, like person was trained, what did they do, and can we see if they're making mistakes or they're doing things wrong, or can we see that they're still continuing using the product a few weeks later? And then coming back to your point about then kind of that reinforcement, we have Eurecos as our LMS, and we've kind of built this whole email campaign program as well, where people come to training, we follow up with, here's some really awesome stuff, we do advanced training courses, so we really recommend you come to this now, and have you checked out this? We're trying those things, but the product bit, that for me is the next bit that we're going to kind of really dig our teeth into.
That's amazing. I'd like to see where you get with that, because once you can get that full 360 view of the customer and their involvement, this is one of the hardest problems to solve, Dan. It's so complicated. Yet if you can get that, you can get it nailed, then you go, hey, we trained this customer and they've stayed engaged. These customers who, like you said, they dropped off in the second class. Well, we need to make an accountability agreement with that customer to reinforce, you need to come back. It's an hour. Maybe we need to change it. Maybe that's an on-demand course. I don't know. This is great. I really appreciate this conversation. And let's ease out by a recap. What I wanted to say is that, look, for those of you who are listening in the audience today and you think, instructor-led training, why are we doing that? Well, it's alive, it's evolving, it's coming, it's back. It hasn't left. We've probably over-indexed on demand. We have to have a balance and a hybrid, and because it's good for people in different modes to see and do and not just look at a screen. So we've talked about how to design a really good program. You've got a framework, and preparing for the future is really important as well. What do you do? How do you look at your feedback? Let's go back and replay. I think, could you tell me about structuring your VILT session again in a simplified way? What are the main bullet points that you should be thinking about? And again, we're going to come back with a one pager for this show and put all this stuff in it so you can look at it. So tell me a little about that. You know, you're starting off with the icebreaker and then where do you go?
Yeah. So you've got your welcome and icebreaker. We're not saying while we wait, we're getting mm-hmm. those questions in early. We're finding out who the audience is. We're trying to find out what the experience levels are of these folks so that we can potentially utilize those in the class. We're getting into the learning objectives, but we're visualizing those rather than actually sort of showing as many slides as possible. We're using the framework, if we want to call it framework or a guide, or I mean, I'm not too picky about words when it comes to these
things. Structure. But, how do you do this kind of thing?
The structure. Yeah, you know, the tell me, show me, let me try, let me explore, review, and test me. We go into that. We tend to, we tend to only do two or three topics, so that we're not covering too much. But again, it's topics that are relevant to the things that they are going to do in your product as soon as that class finishes. We want to make it as instant as possible. So again, that comes back to the scheduling piece we were talking about a few minutes ago, but as instant as possible. So we've gone through a couple of those. We're then going to wrap up the session by kind of look. We've got a help center. You've obviously come to us for our academy experience. So we've got badges that you can get through going through that entire experience. Maybe we've got a second class that you need to come back to. So make sure if you haven't done so, you do so. And then when we come to the end, I think it's trying to maximize every moment. So something that stuck with me early on in my career was like people always seem to remember the beginning and the end of things.
Right.
And so when you think the end, you just bring up a thank you slide and you set everybody off into the wild. And that's that. It doesn't feel like a very poignant way to reflect. It's just like, okay, cool. We've done the thing and all right, bye. So that awkward ending at the end of like an event you've been to or whatever, like, oh, okay, bye. So we tend to leave with two or three memorable things at the end. And those aren't the topics that we covered because we've recapping the topics that we covered at the end of the class and making sure that everyone's comfortable. But what are those really important things? And that could be maybe some of the mistakes that were made in the class. Let's remember, we don't want to be doing these things or remember these things, but we have some, we have some canned ones that we can go to, like, these fields are really important. Let's remember that these fields do this, this, and this, but it's those bits that, if they just remember that and maybe they don't remember much else, but they can figure out how to navigate your platform, they'll be all right. So just try to end it with something that's important rather than just a thank you and,
right.
So long.
Right.
So that would be my simplified version of how to structure it. Just, again, maximize every moment you have.
Phenomenal. And then I'll recap one of the other things that you said to me that I think is important and you've shared throughout. It's also think about you or your instructor, your educator, your energy, your empathy, when you're talking about memorable wrap up and you're the motivator, you're the impeller, you're the person, and you've also talked about events and how this is an event, it's exciting, it's interesting, you're engaging your audience. So this is amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Dan. As we walk out the door again, what's the best way for people in our community to reach out to you and connect?
Well, firstly, thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed chatting about this. And if folks do want to chat more with me, you'll find me on LinkedIn. You'll find me in the SEDMA community. And if folks are traveling to Austin next March, I will be there. Eating probably various amounts of guacamole to bring it back full circle in various tacos that you can find in Austin. So that's where you can find me as well.
Fabulous. Yeah, the Austin event was a wonderful one, and we did eat a lot of tacos and stuff. All right, Dan, I'm going to release you back to do more training. And fans, audience, if you want to learn more, remember, we have our podcast website at customer.education. You can find all of our stuff there. For this this one in particular, we'll be putting up some show notes and a one pager. We're also part of the greater customer education community, and we span multiple places for that. If you're looking to connect with us, check us out on LinkedIn, go see Sedma. We're all over the place. And there you can learn from, connect with, and share your ideas with peers and leaders. Special thanks to Alan Coda, as always, for our wonderful theme music. And this helps you out. Help us out by subscribing in Apple Podcast, Overview, Stitcher, all of the podcatchers of your choice. Please leave us a positive review, because that really helps. And share this podcast with those who you know may be struggling, maybe trying to learn. We've got over 160 episodes in the can right now with all kinds of things, and focusing on our friends like Dan here, who have the deep experience and the chops to do what we need to do. So to our audience, thank you once again. Thank you, Dan. Thanks for joining us. Get out there, educate, experiment, and find your people. Thanks, everybody.